From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 7th day of December, 2021. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with John Hester from L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Wayne Nelson is out of the office. We'll take a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon, hear all about the agricultural weather from Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and talk about the agricultural energy markets with Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today at $5.86 a bushel, up 2.5. The May at $5.88.5, 2.5 higher. And December futures of next year at $5.55, 2.5 higher. Soybeans finished 11.25 lower at $12.50.25. The March there at $12.58.25, down 8.25. And November soybeans 1.5 lower at $12.31.75. Bean meal down 2.90. The bean oil for the day 76 cents lower. Wheat futures soft red up 2.25 at $8.08.5. The hard red at $8.27.5, a nickel higher. And live cattle futures were down 42.5 cents at $139.22.5. Feeders at $165.25, 22.5 cents lower. And lean hogs at $76.55, $1.67.5 higher. We're now joined by John Hester. He is at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, to discuss the marketplace. Good afternoon to you, John. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Todd.
Well, tell me about your view of the marketplace as we move through the final month of the calendar year and what your expectations really are at this point.
Okay, well, right now I feel like, you know, corn's kind of in a range, 555, 560 to $5.95 to $6. It's been in there for quite a while. Goes up and hits the top and sells off. You know, I think what's holding it down is lackluster export demand. Nobody seems to be wanting to buy anything. But what's keeping it from falling completely out of bed is the ethanol plants are around here anyway, are crying for corn. Want corn, and there's a lot of feed use, domestic feed use for the corn. That's my feelings on the corn, and you know, for the market to get above $6, we're going to have some export sales, looks like to me. And then the soybeans is similar to the corn, 1170 to 1290 is the range it's been in for quite a while. And, you know, it's going to be hard to break out of it that on the top side because Brazilian crop's off to a pretty good start. And we have about the third largest supply ever in beans. I read that this morning. And crush margins are strong, and that is one reason that the bottom hadn't fell out of it.
We do have a question about corn as it relates to ethanol usage. Demand has been strong. I'm wondering whether basis, which has really been holding the market up and tightening up as we get closer to the end of the year, is reacting to the lack of corn that was available at the end of the last marketing year, so what was left over from the 2020 crop, and the idea that farmers generally close the pen doors and they don't open them back up until we start into the January-February delivery timeframe, and what might happen, if anything, to basis and the futures once we turn the calendar into 2022.
You know, I think the basis is going to stay strong. I had a guy tell me this morning that for February or March that he thought Cargill up here, Crawfordsville or in Linden, was paying 20 over. So we're looking, there's $6 corn right now if you want to contract a little bit ahead. But I think the farmers, you know, they're bound and determined, or they think in the back of their mind that corn's going a lot higher. And I think that'll keep the bin doors closed pretty tight for a while, and that'll keep the basis strong because they're, you know, we'll try to probably the corn out of the grain bins that are the doors that are locked shut.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
All right. Hey, have fun. Have a good weekend. Stay warm.
I will, John. You too. That's John Hester. He is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, China's soybean imports rose sharply in the month of November from the previous month as more shipments from the United States arrived during the peak North American export season. That, according to customs data released earlier today, the world's top buyer of soybeans brought in 8.57 million tons in November, up 68% from the October figure of 5.11 million, and data from the General Administration of Customs showed. Hurricane Ida, of course, limited U.S. grain exports in September, including soybeans, by crippling terminals and delaying shipments. U.S. shipments picked up later as the hurricane impact eased and the market entered the peak export season. For the whole marketing year, however, China's U.S. soybean imports are expected to fall from the previous year as the hurricane delays clipped the export window for the American soybean, which also faces strong competition from an early Brazilian harvest, which is due to begin coming out at the end of this month and certainly in early January. In other end-user news, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack is defending EPA's handling of the much-delayed biofuel blending requirements and claims EPA will act soon. That's expected to happen today, but as of 1:25, no announcement had been made. Vilsack responded to a biofuel industry concern over EPA's proposed further delays in several years of oil industry compliance deadlines for blending biofuels into gas and diesel fuel.
I fully expect and anticipate in the very near future the EPA will announce those standards. And I think what's important is that they will likely also respond to the outstanding waiver requests that are currently indicating consistency with maintaining stability in the program.
Though EPA has not specified new compliance dates in its proposed deadline delays, saying small refinery waiver decisions must come first, further frustrating ethanol advocates. But Vilsack argues $3 million has just announced higher blending pump grants and $700 million in earlier announced biofuel producer aid will help the industry and corn and soybean growers.
If you look at the overall effort here, I think you're going to see consistent support for the RFS, as well as the opportunity that was announced several months ago for the development of the new biofuel industry for aviation fuel.
With more than $4 billion in new federal grants and loans to create a 36-billion-gallon industry.
United, American Airlines, and other airlines are clamoring for a drop-in aviation fuel that will allow them to comply with international standards as they fly these long-term flights and allow them to lower costs. And the reality is to significantly reduce the environmental footprint.
Vilsack points out ethanol burns cleaner than gasoline and cuts climate pollution, key to biofuel producers' argument that administration should embrace, not delay, volume requirements or rely on the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and OPEC for help. We'll stay with energy for a moment. The Diesel Technology Forum plans a webinar with industry leaders about the future policy, technology, and fuels considerations for agricultural machines and equipment. The free webinar, Making America's Farms Greener and More Productive with Advancements in Farming Technology, takes place December the 16th. The organization's executive director, Alan Schaefer, says diesel engines power the majority of agricultural equipment and are evolving to continue to serve the sector in the future, which will include new fuels and options. Leaders in agricultural machines and equipments will explore how new innovations in machines, fuels, and the use of smart farming systems are contributing to boost in productivity and yields with lower emissions and sharing their insights on the future. The free webinar is part of a series exploring strategies to reduce greenhouse gas and other emissions across key sectors of the economy. While free, registration is required to participate. For more information, you can visit dieselforum.org. That's dieselforum.org. And finally today, the Illinois Farm Bureau delegates today re-elected President Richard Giebert Jr. and Vice President Brian Duncan at the organization's annual meeting in Chicago. Giebert of Ellis Grove in Randolph County was elected to a two-year term as the Illinois Farm Bureau president. Giebert has served as IFB's president for the past 8 years and previously served as vice president of IFB from 2003 to 2013. Brian Duncan of Polo in Ogle County was also elected to a two-year term as the IFB vice president. Duncan has served as the Illinois Farm Bureau's vice president for the past 4 years and previously served as the Ogle County Farm Bureau president. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Today, December the 7th, we remember the attack on Pearl Harbor by the nation of Japan. It brought the United States into World War II. It was 80 years ago, but not so distant. The attack killed 2,335 U.S. servicemen and wounded 1,143 more, in addition to the 68 civilians who lost their lives and 34 whom were wounded. On the morning of the attack, the United States carrier group attached to the USS Enterprise in the Pacific Fleet was some 215 miles west of Oahu. A man who would have been my wife's uncle, her father's brother, was on board one of those ships in the group. The Enterprise sent 18 SBD Dauntless dive bombers out on patrol as it sailed that morning to Pearl Harbor, the 7th day of December. The dive bombers were to land in Hawaii ahead of the carrier's arrival, but by complete coincidence, they actually happened to run into the middle of the first wave of Japan's attack. Now, those bombers immediately joined the battle. 7 were shot down by the Japanese or by friendly fire, with 8 pilots and crew killed and 2 wounded. After the attack, the Enterprise was ordered to send an attack force to find and destroy the Japanese carriers, which the Navy incorrectly believed was south of Oahu. Unable to find the carriers, the dive bombers returned to the Enterprise while the fighters flew to Pearl Harbor, where some were shot down by friendly fire. The following summer, during the August 24, 1942 battle of the Stewart Islands, John P. Gorman made the ultimate sacrifice for this nation. An uncle my wife never knew lost his life. And John Gorman was a seaman second class in the U.S. Navy and awarded a Purple Heart. 80 years ago today, World War II started for the United States with the attack on Pearl Harbor, and we should take time to remember the sacrifices made. Let's check the agricultural energies on this Tuesday, as we usually do. Today, we're joined by Dave Chatterton. He's with Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Hi, Dave. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Todd. Good to be with you.
Before we get to the agricultural energies, I want to talk about your Thursday event at the iHotel. I think people can still sign up for that if they want. Interestingly enough, Bruce Sherrick will be there, and he'll be talking about carbon markets. He's the director of the Center for Farmland Research on campus. Did a really good job on a webinar that I hosted with him yesterday about the values of farmland. People can find that at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu under the webinars archive. But he didn't talk much about carbon markets yesterday. I know he's got a great presentation for you folks on Thursday, and you'll have Colin Peterson there, former U.S. representative and chair of the Ag Committee in the House of Representatives. And I'm looking forward. I'm going to come out because I think both of those things will be really interesting as we come into 2023. And then, of course, you all will be talking about markets and weather and, I suppose, crop insurance, too.
Yeah, Todd, it's our annual customer seminar. We're excited to have both Bruce and Colin be a part of it this year. We were able to get back together in person. There's something that we haven't been able to do for a while. There's also going to be a virtual option. You can register on our website. It's just us, farmmarketing.com. But certainly what we're trying to do is put a lot of information in front of you. We think the carbon credit, front or is something that is going to become more and more important and more a mix of your profit per acre or your P&L per acre calculation going forward. There are certainly a lot of things going on in Washington right now that affect the farm bill, the potential for crop insurance, and the government programs going forward. So we're excited to hear Colin's viewpoint on that. And of course, we will include a good mix here about general, you know, grain markets as well as crop insurance and where things look like they're pointing here for the February or for the spring sign up.
Yeah, I'll bet Colin Peterson will have a few things to say about renewable fuels and how they're going to play into the future as well. Corn-based ethanol, and there'll be a couple different versions of biofuels, renewable diesel from vegetable oils, including soybean oil, and of course, biofuel from soybeans. So something worth checking a look at. You can check it out at sfarmmarketing.com. You'll need to look under the events. It's a little hard to find, but under events, and you can get yourself registered for that. So we sort of transitioned into ag energies there. Ethanol has just been on a tear because profit levels at the plants have been really, really good. Is that still the case?
Yes, it is to the most part, Todd. We have weakened up here a little bit. The spot ethanol margins have weakened here as the spot inverses have eroded just a little bit. We've had some, you know, kind of the COVID, the Omicron variant, you know, wind down and then wind back up. But we still calculate margins here, the second highest for this time of the year, dating back to our database to 2016. So spot ethanol margins still very good. Gasoline demand has really not suffered because of this new variant. I mean, there was a fear, of course, that that would happen, not only in the U.S., but globally. We really haven't seen either one of those develop in any large degree. We had the OPEC, you know, decision that came, you know, right after Thanksgiving as well here. And, you know, the market has passed all that by and regained some of its footing. So ethanol margins, ethanol demand outlook remains very good. We have a USDA update on Thursday here as well. Don't really anticipate that they're going to adjust that ethanol margin, but there's or ethanol usage number, but there's certainly no reason for it to come down, Todd.
And then the cold weather has arrived. Will that have much of an impact, you think, over the winter months on availability and of fuels in general? And what impact does it have? And I suppose we ought to talk about the price of crude oil in the same breath.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you start with King crude, if you want to put it in that way, just a little bit unlike what we've seen in the equity markets where the entire, you know, COVID, you know, decline has been made up for now and we're on to fresh territory. We haven't quite done that in the oil complex, but we're well on our way to doing so. And it's really regained its footing here. That comes despite the decision by OPEC to go ahead and stick to their schedule of increasing production by 400,000 barrels per month going forward after the first of the year. The market had kind of hoped that maybe they would stand down from that. But all the demand, you know, indicators continue to be rather strong here. And we continue to point to some strength in the market going forward. Cold weather is only going to accentuate that, not only from a supply and just a logistical, you know, standpoint, but also from a demand standpoint. So the forecasts, you know, right now don't show, I guess, what I would call lasting or severe cold for our part of the country, but certainly weather is always subject to change, Todd. We'll keep an eye on that as it goes forward here.
Anything else that we should be aware of before I let you go for the day?
Well, I think as a producer, you still want to be looking at, you know, what your fuel needs are going to be for next spring. I know the producers have been very active in trying to lock up fertilizer and seed and other input costs. Fuel should be right in that bucket. We had a good break, you know, over the last couple of weeks where, you know, hopefully you could have added a little bit of coverage. If not, I think it's a market where you do want to be looking to your supplier on any kind of market breaks here to try and get some contracts in place for spring or some supply into your tanks here. It looks to us like the market is going to stay relatively well supported going into the spring, and that just like the fertilizers, just like the chemicals, that fuel could be a somewhat of a tight supply. So don't let that fall off of your planning sheet, even though it's not a big item, but something that you need to keep in mind here.
Thanks much, and I look forward to seeing you Thursday.
We'll look forward to seeing you, Todd. Thank you.
That's Dave Chatterton. He is with Strategic Farm Marketing. You can find him at sfarmmarketing.com. Don Day is here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, to discuss the weather forecast. Thanks, Don, for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
It was cold overnight here. I think 16 degrees was our low. That's pretty cold. Although we're supposed to get warmer by the end of the week, I guess that'll be short-lived.
It will be. We're definitely transitioning into a completely different weather pattern across the northern hemisphere compared to where we were for most of November. And for the first several days of December, as we well know, most of the lower 48 had a very mild November, really not much winter at all during the month, but now we're seeing the log jam that was holding up the cold air up in Alaska, the Northwest Territories, and the Yukon, and parts of Canada. Well, while the worst of the severe cold is still going to be up there, we're going to get releases, little pockets of cold air that will have an opportunity to move south into the U.S. and then basically go coast to coast. I think what we'll have here over the next couple of weeks will be a storm system or front about every 3 to 5 days traversing the United States. And this is going to mean more precipitation chances and some ups and downs. But the downs are going to be a little bit more noticeable, as we just witnessed.
So you mentioned that this will open up. I think of it sometimes like a bucket of water in the Arctic, except it's a bucket of really cold air. Does that mean that it opens up, it drops down through the jet stream, and then the westerlies push those systems across the United States towards the east? And how far to the west are we cold?
Well, you know what? It's going to be getting cold all the way to the west coast. And really, over the next 2 weeks, the concentration of the coldest temperatures, at least when you look at averages, relative to averages, the coldest weather will be in the northern plains, the northern Great Lakes, into the central High Plains, Rockies, and into the west coast. In fact, there is going to be, over the next couple of weeks, some really good opportunities for California, parts of the Great Basin, and the central and northern Rockies, and the Pacific Northwest to get some wet weather. It's going to be good news for them, but the concentration of the most stormy weather will be there, and then also in the southeastern United States, as these frontal systems move across the country rather quickly west to east. We call this a transient pattern, where systems don't necessarily get stuck, but frequent the area. And that's going to be wet down in the southeastern United States, as there's going to be opportunities for showers and thunderstorms along the Gulf Coast and the southeast. Around or just after Christmas time, we may see a bit more concentration of cold come out of those northern latitudes and into the lower 48 states. So things are changing.
Any thought that process that cold air can drop like it did last year as far south as parts of Texas that caused some real problems?
I think there's a real opportunity for that to happen again this winter. Do I see it over the next couple of weeks? No, I don't. Late December and early January, we definitely need to watch that. And some of the reasons we say that is that we have a very similar pattern to where we were a year ago. A moderately strong La Nina, very robust across the subtropical Pacific. And La Nina patterns, especially in the heart of winter, can cause some or help along some of these Arctic outbreaks where you do get some deep penetration south of that Arctic air. So that is certainly something that we're going to continue to watch. And I think the odds really go up late this month and into early January.
And one final item, you mentioned that it will be kind of wet. I don't know about snowy. Any blizzard effects across the northern plains? If that's the case and it's wet snow, it often creates issues for the cattlemen there.
There's going to be concerns after that really mild November, and a lot of folks wondering the way December started is, you know, are we ever going to get winter started? Definitely looks like there's going to be concerns for stock growers in those northern and western plains, because these systems coming through not only are going to bring some pretty cold air, but some opportunities for snowfall as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.